today, crypto into 2023. Again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, I'm joined tonight by Adam Stokes. Hi, Adam.
G'day, Martin. Good to see you. Festive greetings to you.
Thank you indeed, and to you too. Well, we're between Christmas and New Year, and I thought we should have a bit of a debrief on crypto this year, but also thinking ahead. Because, of course, it's been a really bumpy, turbulent year for crypto. And, I mean, when we say crypto, of course, that's a very big curly bracket, everything from Bitcoin through to HEX through to all of the other stuff that's there. But let me sort of start by just getting your sort of initial take on the year, because, well, prices are down, aren't they? Considerably down from where they were. And the general consensus appears to be that there's a little bit of wobbliness around the place. Of course, FTX blew up through the year, and a few other things too. So what's your thoughts on it?
It's been probably the toughest year in crypto, but also the biggest year in crypto. So if you think about the four-year cycles, we were actually expecting, no matter what happened, this was a year for crypto to pull back, because this is actually part of the four-year cycle. So unfortunately, it was business as usual in the sense that these markets would pull back. However, we've had three of the biggest collapses, arguably Terra Luna, Celsius, and FTX. They are the three biggest collapses that we've seen in crypto history. Some would say Mt. Gox, going all the way back about 7-8 years ago, but the money that was in Mt. Gox, a lot of Bitcoin, but compared to where we are at the moment, because there is more money in these markets, these pullbacks, these falls, these collapses have hurt a lot more people. But equally, Bitcoin is still a lot higher than what it was 7 or 8 years ago. So when we look at Bitcoin as a hedge against inflation, it in fact has performed. That is, if you think about Bitcoin performing as a hedge against normal cash markets, if you bought 3 or 4 years ago as part of that cycle, you would have got around the $8,000 mark, possibly sold around the $70,000 or $100,000 mark if we're talking Australian dollars, $65,000 if we're talking US dollars, and Bitcoin did what it was supposed to do. However, when you look at the altcoin markets, and we now have over 21,000 altcoins out there, a lot of them are pumps and dumps, a lot of them are scams, and we are just facing the reality of markets are manipulated by people. That is, sure, markets are a reflection of what the people are feeling, therefore doing in their buys and sells, but equally, we can see that over the last 200 years of the traditional financial sector, where we've had Ponzi schemes, scams, pumps and dumps, and manipulations of markets, those same scams are rolling out in the crypto space, but a lot quicker. And you could argue, as we discussed in our last video, Martin, what we've recently seen with the crash of FTX was pretty much the Lehman Brothers event that we unfortunately have seen a lot of people hurt by this. But what I am relieved about is to see that Sam Bankman-Fried will hopefully be held to account for what he has done.
Well, it'll be interesting, because he is now shipped back to the US, and I think he's on bail at the moment, pending further investigations. But it's interesting that the person who took over in FTX said it's the most poorly run company he's ever seen in his life. So this is not specifically crypto related. It's to do with poor management of a very large and complex financial entity,
combined with the velocity of these markets. Because things are moving so quickly and there's so much money, and you know if you think of the traditional financial markets, a stock exchange as an example, it's open 9 to 4:30, 48 to 50 weeks a year, depending which market we're looking at. That's a lot of time that those markets are closed, and the barriers of entry into those markets are quite high. You may need a $500 minimum buy-in, you may need to join a bank, you may need to fill out certain paperwork. So barrier to entry is quite large, and the markets being open is quite small. Crypto is the complete opposite of that. The barrier to entry is tiny. You need 1 cent and a mobile phone connection, and the markets are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So these things are moving so quickly that if there is something going wrong, they can get so big so quickly, but then crash so quickly. And again, not to harp on this point, but it really is a reflection of what we've seen in the traditional financial markets. And that is why we have the evolution, if you will, of ASIC or the SEC or whatever jurisdiction or whatever body is put in place to protect consumers from these types of frauds. Now, of course, we are going to see this spill over into the crypto space. Even with the SEC trying to figure out what is XRP and what is crypto, is it a security? We still don't even have an answer to that. My concern, Martin, is that as we evolve in the crypto timeline, that we're going to have people who may not understand the technology and power around crypto trying to make laws around it. And I heard something quite profound that Henry Ford said, back in the day. He basically said, give people what they need, not what they want. And the example that he gave is that if we gave people what they wanted rather than what they needed, we would have actually given people faster horses instead of a car. And I thought that was a very powerful analogy, because when it comes to financial markets and using money, when many people say, what do I need Bitcoin for? What do I need a digital currency for? You could repeat that line over so many evolutions of technology. What do I need email for when I have a postal service? What do I need a car for when I have a horse? What do I need a telephone for when I have a messenger boy? These are all steps in history where technological advancements may not be necessarily understood at first, but once they are not only understood and embraced, they become a necessity in the way of life.
Yeah, and these things often are not linear. Right. So, you know, if you think back through the last innovative phase, the dot-com bubble, you know, we have crashes there as well. So, no one would today say that the internet was a flash in the pan is going to disappear. Right. It's a fundamental part of the furniture now. And I would argue that that's a bit like where we are with, the digital currencies very early in the cycle, but probably not going anywhere. But it is worth just reflecting on this. You know, you and I've been speaking about this for quite some little time. One of the things I said some time ago was I was concerned by the derivative overlays that were actually being imposed into crypto land. And I was said at the time, I remember saying it, it's very, very like what the mainstream finance system was doing. And, you know, one of the reasons why FTX blew up was because of the derivatives that were being actually built off the back. So the funds were actually coming in, and it wasn't really just a standard exchange. It was actually a source of funds that was then actually put back into derivatives to try and actually create more value, et cetera, et cetera. And it's exactly the same philosophy as the old Main Street when it comes to derivatives. And, you know, just like in the global financial crisis when a lot of the derivatives blew up, you can see the same things again. So a lot of this is human nature. It's not really just the crypto thing. And in a way, if we don't understand that, then we can throw the baby out with the bathwater if we're not careful.
Absolutely. And a really good example with the dot-com bubble there is that, you know, was the internet a scam because dot-coms went up too quickly? Of course not. Now, did people lose a lot of money in the dot-com bubble? Absolutely. But if you think of pizza.com as an example, that recently sold, and when I say recently, within the last 12 to 24 months, tens upon tens of millions of dollars. Now, that's someone who bought in the dot-com era of pizza.com. Now, was that a scam? Was it a bubble? Well, it wasn't a scam. Yes, it was a bubble, but it didn't mean the technology didn't exist. And when we talk about Wall Street, what we were concerned about is that Wall Street would infect the crypto markets in ways that you've just described, with, you know, derivatives, how they were played, how would you manipulate these markets, how you play these tricks. It wasn't actually Wall Street itself. If you will, let's imagine that Wall Street was an institution per se. It was the individuals within those markets who understood, aha, there is a gap that we can play the games of the past in there and get very rich very quickly. And they did it beautifully. They came in there. I'm not saying it was a good thing, but I'm saying it was done before. Regulators caught on to that. They stopped it and they slowed it down and then almost eliminated it. There's always corruption and the breaking of rules everywhere. Like, we have regulations in driving, but that doesn't mean people don't speed and people don't drink drive. Just because you put regulations in markets or on some type of technology doesn't mean that people won't break those regulations. What happened, of course, in crypto is that it was the wild, wild west, and there were people making unforeseeable amounts of money legally and some making it immorally. And as we can see now with Sam Bankman-Fried, illegally, where the government really needs to pick up the pace. Is they, as first of all, absolutely do not throw out the baby with the bathwater, because it's like turning your back on the internet. You will not succeed if you turn your back on the internet. Just ask Kodak how they went turning their back on their own digital technology of the digital image. They're out of business now. You cannot turn your back on this. So if they don't embrace it, what happens is you're going to have more scams. You're going to have more Sam Bankman-Frieds. But if governments try and push it away, it's just going to go offshore. We need to embrace this technology now. And I emphasize there are two sides to it. You've got the currency, the digital currency, that most people think that's all crypto's about. I make this magic, funny internet money that suddenly has value for some reason, but that's only one tiny, small proportion of it. The other part, of course, is smart contracts and digitizing ownership and making scarce digital assets, which is opening up a whole new world of how we're going to do business in everything in life.
Yeah, and that of course is the future when it comes to being able to make secure digital contracts in real time and transferring value in real time at very low cost, which is much better than today. That's one of the reasons why there are a number of different pilots going on at the moment, and it's very important to make sure that we understand that this is a big universe, and what we're talking about is the first early phases. Just before we go into that, let me just highlight a couple of things. One of the things I want to highlight is that with the FTX thing, there were a lot of celebrities that were endorsing this, right? And a lot of those celebrities probably got paid quite a lot of money to be able to actually endorse these things. And so therefore, a lot of people say, well, if they say it's right, it must be right. And there's an object lesson there. Just because somebody says it's best thing since sliced bread, it may not be. Always do your own due diligence. And the other thing, of course, is that FTX was actually so powerfully connected both politically and also through sports and sponsorships. They played a very clever game to be able to give the air of an entity that was actually leading the charge and the center of gravity and the future, when in fact the emperor had no clothes.
I was listening to Peter Schiff, your friend that you've had on the channel, I think two or three times now. And what he was saying was very interesting in the sense that all these big investors that you speak about, so obviously you've got celebrities, they're throwing money in their face, and it's like, well, just talk about this thing. And on one hand, I feel kind of sorry for them in the sense that they are not business people, they are not financial advisors, they are sports people and movie stars or whatever. Someone gives them a sponsorship deal. We see it, is it a moisturizing cream? Is it an oil? Is it a car? Is it a trading platform? So on that side, to sue them for advertising that, well, I'll leave that to the lawyers. But as Peter Schiff was talking about, what about the equity funds? What about the huge business operators where they do know money and they do know about how these markets work? And Kevin O'Leary is the biggest one that we need to point the finger at. Kevin O'Leary, he's been on Shark Tank for many years, a successful business person, apparently. He was paid $15 million US to plug FTX and essentially Sam Bankman-Fried and basically endorse the product. Now, what was interesting during the congressional hearings is that the first thing that Kevin O'Leary said is like, oh, it's not our fault, it's Binance's fault. And it's like, what? It's like Coca-Cola doing something criminal, like, I don't know, poisoning people, and then saying, oh, it was Pepsi's fault. I mean, it was that blatantly stupid and absurd that, there's a lot more than meets the eye with Kevin O'Leary. I'm very concerned about that individual. He should have known better. He sold his soul, in my opinion, and sold out a lot of people to basically make a quick buck. Now let's go into the media and the political side. What's so interesting as well, Martin, is that if you recall, the media have been slamming crypto for years. They've always hated crypto. We have been on the outskirts trying to learn about crypto and teach people about it, basically on YouTube and social media, because the mainstream doesn't want a bar of it. Yet suddenly, primarily the left media started to endorse Sam Bankman-Fried as this godlike savior who was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and that is, he hadn't already done it, but in the future he was going to do it, donate all this money and only drive a crappy car and give all the money that he made from crypto to charity. So there was this very interesting shift where suddenly the media out of nowhere went from, we hate crypto, it's horrible, it's all a scam, it's all a Ponzi scheme, to Sam Bankman-Fried is the greatest investor in all time history. He has an incredible product. We should all endorse Sam Bankman-Fried. Now we move on to the political side of it. We can see that tens upon tens of millions of dollars were donated to the Democrats. Now, yes, I will actually put the caveat out there. There was some money put out there to the Republicans, but it was absolutely nothing compared to what was given to the Democrats. So, chance or coincidence, Martin, that you see this guy come out of nowhere from a very rich upbringing, very privileged life, very rich parents, very privileged university upbringing, And suddenly he's got the full endorsement of pretty much the majority, well, the left media. And you've got massive sponsorship deals going out to business people, celebrities. You've got money that you're giving to political parties. And suddenly it all comes crashing down. If you may recall, he was going to give testimony. He was going to speak openly at a congressional hearing, the one that where Kevin O'Leary went forward and said, it wasn't us, it was Binance. What was interesting is that he was arrested just days before that hearing. Now, what was discussed in the crypto community is that we actually believe as a possibility that he was actually going to throw a lot of people under the bus during that congressional hearing. So on one hand, we're saying, why did it take him so long to be arrested? But in reality, he was actually arrested very quickly because it's a complex crime. He's overseas. They were gathering a lot of evidence. And according to legal experts, he was actually arrested a lot sooner than what someone else would have been. But it was just so ironic that he was arrested, you know, at the 12th hour before he was going to give evidence at these congressional hearings, where I believe he was going to throw a lot of people under the bus. Now, as a result, he's now been arrested and can't speak. He can't do the media shows that he used to do all the time. You know, he was always turning up for interviews. He was always being, just after it all collapsed, he was going out and saying, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. It wasn't a bad thing. It was all accident. I didn't know what was happening. I'm sorry. It was an accident. And every word that he was saying was incriminating himself. Every time he put himself in front of a camera, his lawyer probably would have been curling their toes thinking, oh, what is this guy doing? But when it came to the point of a congressional hearing where it's like, okay, now you have free rein to talk in front of Congress, that's when he was arrested. And now he can't speak. He can't speak in front of the television camera or in front of the politicians. So we want to know what's going on.
And I think that's exactly the right questions. And you know, how much of it will really come out and how much of it will not is the big question. There will be a series of, I suppose, legal processes and other processes. But of course, the collateral damage for perhaps relative naive and people who really didn't know much about crypto, but sort of piled in and, you know, they got their checks from the government through COVID and then threw it into crypto and, you know, maybe have lost quite a lot. And certainly even on Australia, you know, the FTX Australian operation, there's about, what, 30,000 people in Australia that perhaps have, you know, taken a hit. So the collateral damage here in terms of individuals and individual finances is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it goes very wide, and we can't actually even be sure how wide as yet. For example, if you look at some companies that went down, such as BlockFi, BlockFi, in fact, had been audited and checked by the American government to an extent to say, yeah, we can see where you're operating, we can see your books, we can see what you're doing, we can see what's happening. So that was a relative safe haven as an example of something that was working legally. But because FTX was so big, they actually bought BlockFi, and their toxic behaviors contaminated many different markets and many different operations that were otherwise operating legally and properly. But then when the parent company, that being FTX, bought them all up and contaminated it all, it spread so far and wide that so many people were damaged by it. Now, the truth is, as I mentioned before, this is in fact part of the 4-year cycle. So we've had the perfect storm. If you think of how big the last year or this year has been, as we get to the end of 2022. If you think that it's a 4-year cycle, so irrespective of anything else, this should have happened. But then you combine it with stimulus checks, COVID, Russia, Celsius, Terra Luna, and FTX. It's remarkable that Bitcoin's still at $16,500. It is in fact a testament to the market. So I know I'm a glass half full guy and I'm all for crypto. So I'll give that caveat openly there. It's like, oh, you're just defending the markets. No, really. I mean, think about it. Russia and Ukraine, even what's been happening in China recently with their lockdowns. And then you've got three massive collapses within crypto in itself and the 4-year cycle and the pandemic all happening at once. And there's still the better part of $1 trillion in these markets. Honestly, in my opinion, it's not that bad, and we're going to see these things recover. These things move very quickly, just as we've seen banks collapse before, and we've seen investment funds collapse before, and super funds. It will recover. It's just that it will recover much quicker than what happens in traditional financial markets.
And it's interesting, because I was reading something on Cointelegraph the other day, who was saying, you know, around 16 and a half $100,000 US. There's a lot of potential opportunity for people to come back into the market, because that's quite close to what the actual current mining costs are of Bitcoin. So there's a bit of a floor there. And it's interesting, if you look at the trends, you know, it's sort of sitting around that level or just above, but it's not dropped below it.
Yeah, for many years, or many months, I should say, when I say years, I jokingly say that for every one human year is, or one crypto year is like seven human years, because it is, the velocity is that quick. So we $18,500 was tested eight times, and eight times that seemed to be the bottom. Then when we had FTX, when the FTX collapsed, it was actually just before, which indicates people knew what was going to happen. Yes, the new floor seems to be around the $16,500. However, to counter my own argument, if there was another massive sell-off and Bitcoin was to drop to $10,000, when it comes to mining, it kind of self-regulates, because what would happen, many miners would actually turn off their miners. That would make the difficulty less difficult, which would make your rewards greater for those who remained in. So it's actually this incredible self-equalizing system, where if there's a lot of, you know, if there's a lot of speculation of positivity in the markets and Bitcoin goes up, a lot of people will plug in their crypto miners, their ASICs, on the SHA-256 algorithm, and they'll start mining more crypto. And even though it'll cost more energy to mine that crypto because it's worth so much, their payday will come. Likewise, or conversely, if everyone is not confident in the markets and they start selling their Bitcoin, people will start unplugging their Bitcoin miners, and those who are left are facing less difficulty and less competition, therefore they get more Bitcoin for the same amount of energy. So it really is a remarkable system how that works. And in the background, while so many people are focused on price, again, price is such a tiny part of this market. The innovation that's moving forward, it hasn't stopped. People are still developing. People are still investing in this, not just on the speculative side of buy low and sell high, as we've seen arguably with the monetization of the property markets. Property, as we've discussed before, Martin, property wasn't really meant to be a function of financial markets. It was supposed to be a function of giving people a roof over their head and somewhere to do commerce. Of course, when Wall Street or investors or whoever got into the property markets, they really manipulated the markets, for better or worse, intentionally or unintentionally, of making a property market into a financial market. In many ways, that is really what's happening with crypto. Yes, some crypto is purely a financial function, that is, store of value, medium exchange, and a unit of count. It is a global ledger. It is a way of moving and storing money around the world securely and fast without any permission from anyone. But the other side, as I mentioned at the beginning of our talk tonight, is that, in fact, we can build so many things on top of this, as you understand, with smart contracts and digital ownership of assets, digital ownership of physical items, or digital ownership of digital items. And that is what is continuing to evolve and continuing to move forward. Everything is moving to the blockchain. Everything is moving to the digital space, because it is just an evolution of where humanity is going.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about evolution, you know, there are a lot of, you know, other flavors and variants around. And, you know, a few times people have said to me, because I did a show about 2 years ago on HEX when it was quite early in its evolution, you know, and people said, well, you know, HEX is actually different and better. And, you know, and I don't know what your perspective is with regard to HEX in particular, or more generally all of these other flavors, but there is a pantheon of things still going on, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm actually quite impressed that you would speak about HEX. There's over 21,000 cryptocurrencies, and to talk about HEX in particular, HEX has an incredible community behind it. Now, I've had the honor of interviewing the founder of HEX, Richard Hart, three times. My first live stream ever was with Richard Hart on his channel. I was very nervous about it because I was quite young in the crypto land at that time, but there are communities behind these projects that, irrespective of what you or I think or what the media says, the communities are so strong that they continue to chug along and do what they're doing. In fact, HEX is an example. Their community is so strong that Richard Hart has never paid for advertising to put, as an example, a sign on the side of a taxi or a bus shelter. But the community has, because the community has made so much money from this project. and they're so enthusiastic about HEX and so enthusiastic about Richard Hart and everyone who's a hexagon, as they call themselves, that they themselves start to get momentum in this community. And this is where this organic marketing is quite remarkable, because if you think about Bitcoin, you know, I'll go back to Peter Schiff today. He was saying they about Bitcoin and they about Bitcoin doing this and they about Bitcoin doing that. Well, there is no Bitcoin company. It's just organic. And whilst the old paradigm is to look at a board of directors and to look at, you know, a room full of people making decisions, or to look at a media promoting it, it just doesn't exist in something like Bitcoin or HEX. It is so organic that it's just something that is growing in itself. Now, to remain in the HEX community, Richard Hart is now making other projects where he's about to launch something that is going to compete with Ethereum. It's called Pulse. Now, that is expected to launch probably soon. He's not given us a date yet. There's been billions of dollars sacrificed to be part of that project. And it is an example of people are, you know, that we're in the crypto winter. We're bunkered down. We're doing what everyone should do in a crypto winter or any type of winter. This is a time to sharpen the saw, do your reading, you know, do your books, do whatever it is, and get ready for the crypto summer, which will happen again and which will come in the next cycle as all markets move in cycles. And, you know, now is the time, if you believe in this technology, now is a time that even the Warren Buffetts and Charlie Mungers will tell you, you buy when there's blood on the streets. This is not financial advice. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not telling what anyone what to do with their money. But ultimately, it's during these times that people make their moves to make the millions, billions, or potentially trillions in the future when the next cycle comes around.
Hmm. And the reason I picked HEX was partly because from the interview that I did a couple of years ago, there were some very different characteristics, you know, compared with some of the other ones. But this community-led approach interests me because effectively there are, you know, people who are very, very strong advocates of this particular solution set, and, you know, believe it's the future of money and all sorts of things, right? And as you say, many people have made, you know, reasonable amounts off the back of it. But again, I always have this sort of fear in my head about this multi-level marketing theory. You know, the idea is if you're in on the first ground level or the second level, and then you actually spread the word to more people and more people and more people, the people who come on later don't do as well as the people who actually were there on at the foundation of it. And actually, if you go back over the world of crypto, actually multi-level marketing is a pretty fundamental part of it, directly or indirectly.
It's true for every industry. Who made the most in Google? Those who got in first. Who made most in gold? Those who got in first. It is true with every product in humanity. Those who get in first and take the greatest risk will make the biggest reward if it succeeds. And where people, and I'm not arguing with what you're saying, I'm just saying that is in fact business. Anything you invest in, any business, any product, any company, you get in first. Even if you're looking at an IPO as an example, you're taking a big risk for something that may not even work. But if it does work, you make huge amounts of money. The issue, of course, with crypto is that there's 21,000 different cryptos, and essentially there's a smart crypto and a dumb crypto. The market has kind of decided when it comes to a dumb crypto, if you will, it's Bitcoin. We've had Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin Black, Bitcoin Gold, Bitcoin Silver. You take your pick. Essentially, Bitcoin has risen to the top and said, we are going to dominate. Now, that's not because I say it or someone else says it. It's because the market says it. The real push now at the moment is, what is the smart coin? Many will say it's Ethereum, and the market would reflect that. It's a number two coin. Most people are building on top of Ethereum, but there are a lot of very impressive competitors to Ethereum. And if you look at what happened in the, you know, the internet space, Yahoo was massive, but where is it now? Hotmail was massive, but where is it now? AOL was massive, but where is it now? And, you know, go further back with Kodak as the example in the camera space or the image space. So just because you have market share today doesn't necessarily mean you'll have market share tomorrow. In the future, though, I think, as we can see in the internet space, where you have FANG, well, with a double A, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. I think in the future of crypto, you're going to have the same thing. You're going to have 5 to 6 massive companies that do very, very well and will dominate. In my opinion, it'll probably be along the lines of something like Bitcoin, Ethereum, potentially HEX, Pulse, Algorand, Cardano, BNB. Those are probably, and I'm just throwing it out there, I don't know, not a financial advisor, but as an example of, you'll have these industry leaders and everything that follows behind. Now, of course, in normal business, you've got millions upon millions of companies that do very well, but they can fail, they can be bought out, they can do mergers, and that will be the same in crypto. Ultimately, when it comes to dumb coins and money at large, where we all agree, you, me, Peter Schiff, and even Charlie Munger, who hates Bitcoin with a passion, where we all agree and all come together, is that fiat is fake and fiat is dead. Where we don't have consensus is that we don't agree of which is the way forward. I say it's Bitcoin. I say it's Bitcoin because when it comes to money, we need a finite supply. It needs to be scarce, immutable, borderless, censorship resistant, and available to everyone. That's my vision for money. Now, there might be a more efficient Bitcoin, but it doesn't exist. And at the moment, all I can see, looking at all the cryptos everywhere and the adoption and the confidence and the time in the market and the amount of times it's been attacked, the number one solution is Bitcoin. But other people say it's gold. And I say, well, okay, I can't spend gold on the internet or down in the shop. So they say, well, let's just put a digital solution on gold. And I say, well, then you don't need the gold. Use gold for making jewelry and precious metal or whatever you want gold for. But don't turn gold into like the housing market. Housing market should be for houses. Gold market should be for gold. And financial market should be for finance. But I acknowledge why people want gold to back something. But then we go to the scarcity of gold. How much gold is there in the world? Well, currently 2 Olympic-sized swimming pools of gold that we've mined out of the ground. What happens if tomorrow we find 4 more Olympic-sized swimming pools of gold? We've just tripled the supply of gold. What's that going to do to the price of it? So if we know that something is scarce, like Bitcoin, and we know it can't be hacked or broken, like Bitcoin, and it's immutable and open to everyone and not controlled by anyone, but available to everyone, then that gives me confidence in that. What I'm not seeing from someone like Peter Schiff or Charlie Munger, even though we all agree that fiat is dead, fiat is fake, fiat is the cause of so many issues, nearly all the world's problems. Inflation isn't because of what's happening in Russia. Inflation is because they keep printing fake money. What I don't see from these other commentators is a solution. They just say, well, that's broken. I say, well, okay, well, what's the solution? I don't know, but fiat's bad. It's like, well, great. What's the solution? I don't know. But not that. And I said, well, I've got a solution for you. And it's like, no, well, Bitcoin's a Ponzi scheme. It's like, well, you know, we keep going around in circles. So ultimately it comes down to this: what will the market choose? Now, I believe the market will choose a fair money, but then what are we competing with? Well, we're competing with governments. And do governments want a fair money? Well, they want a fair money for them. You know, if you're a government and you can print money, that sounds like a pretty good deal to you, but it's not, well, to them, but it's not a good deal to me. It's not a good deal to me because every time I put money in the bank, I'm losing 20% per annum. The CPI, the inflation rate, is not 8%. It is 20%. Inflation is 20%. So unless every Australian and American and globally, depends where you are, but we're talking about Australia at the moment, unless you're getting a 20% pay rise per annum, you're taking a 20% pay cut per year. It's a matter of fact. And they want to blame it on everything else, but no. They're addicted to taxes. They're addicted to printing money, and it's still not enough money. So they keep printing more and more money, and eventually we're going to do what all empires do when they use fake money. They're going to collapse. Now, if we understand this, and we understand history and mathematics and economics and reality and humans and corruption, we say, all right, we've been addicted to this drug for a long time that's called fiat. Let's wean ourselves off it and get into something that is organic. And that is Bitcoin to me. But how do you get governments? And I'm not having a go at any government here, left or right, it doesn't matter. They're both addicted to it. How do you wean a government off free money? It's like trying to wean a junkie off free heroin. I mean, how do you do it? Especially when there's unlimited amounts for them. So that's where I think we're going to have friction in the future. We've already got friction now, but it's going to get a lot worse. It's going to get a lot worse because when inflation starts getting to 30, 40, 50, and 60%, and then we start moving into what we're seeing in Venezuela, Peru, Cyprus, take your pick. All these countries are starting to fall. Sri Lanka, domino by domino, they're starting to fall because it's all the same thing. It's all fiat. But the last countries to fall will be the first world countries. But will people tolerate this game forever, or will they choose an alternative?
And, you know, the real truth of the matter here is, of course, that central banks are in the middle of piloting central bank digital currencies, right? And there's more than 100 pilots now around the world, including ones in Australia at the moment. And of course, what they're doing is effectively trying to extend their reach. And there was a paper from the Fed last year saying, well, actually, if we do a central bank digital currency, that gives us additional monetary policy tools. So it's the same old, right? And of course, they'll also argue, well, of course, you know, the whole Bitcoin thing blew up and everybody lost their shirt, so you can't trust that. But you can trust us. We're the government. We're here to help, right? And central bank digital currencies is obviously the way for you to go. Now, I'm absolutely anti-central bank digital currencies because of the issues of privacy, of control, and the fact that central banks, to my mind, are part of the problem, not part of the solution. I don't want to give them more ammunition than they've already got. They've already stuffed up the global economy sufficiently far, to my mind, which is, what I think, something you were saying. So an alternative solution that is actually not owned by central banks and not determined by what government policy does is a good thing, which then takes us back to the conversation about, well, okay, then what is the future of money? And as you say, you know, the likes of Bitcoin or the likes of, you know, some of those other solutions that are out there, they have characteristics which are actually more immutable, less ability for governments to sort of mess with them. That actually might make more sense into the future. So it's a really interesting time as we move into 2023 to see how these things play out.
Yeah, I mean, everyone agrees, even governments agree, that digital money is more efficient. It's more efficient because you can see it, you can move it, you don't have to physically print it. Digital is better. When you look at digital images, digital products, you know, we are in a digital age. Now, that's not to say that I don't value cash. And you and I, as we've discussed before, that's how our journey began together, fighting against the cash ban, because it's about that sovereignty and that right to hold something physical and have privacy when you do these exchanges. But you can still digitize that with privacy coins, but they don't want to allow privacy coins because terrorism and tax. But ultimately, when it comes to a CBDC, it's worse than fiat because, as you mentioned, these papers say, well, we're going to have more controls over this. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? More ways of screwing you and I. And the biggest way of screwing you and I, there'll be two main things that will be different with the CBDC. One, they'll put restrictions on areas that you can go. So, you know, take a lockdown 2.0. They'll say you can't spend your money outside of your bubble. So you go across the border and suddenly your money is shut down. And not only is it shut down, but it's flagged and police will arrest you as you're trying to use that money at the cash register. But the second way, and it's limitless what they can do, but the second way is they'll put expiry dates on your money. You'll get paid this month, and if you don't spend that money in the next 30 days, that money will expire. And so what will that do? That will make you go out and waste money on useless crap junk landfill. Now, to the government, that looks good because you're creating, you know, stimulation of the economy. You're making people go out there and buy. But it's really bad for the environment because people are just wasting money on landfill junk. It's also really bad for people who want to get ahead, because if you try and save your money, you're going to lose it because it's going to expire, unless you invest your money with a central bank who says, okay, well, you give your digital money to us and we have a get out of jail free card, where if you give us your digital money, we'll only expire half of your money, or we'll only expire some of your money. That it's just all set up for corruption. And it goes back to, what is money? Money should be a representation of value. Value of what? Like time, energy, skills, resources, whatever it is, money is a representation of value. But when governments or anyone makes money that is fake, it is a representation of corruption. It is a representation of fraud. And the fundamentals of everything we do in life, whether we like it or not, is money. Even if you're a charity and you want to help people, money will allow you to do that. If you're an ambulance service, a fire service, anyone who wants to do good in the world, you need money. And when that money is corrupt at its core, it infects all of society. So, which is why we need to all step back and say, right, we may not like Bitcoin, we may not like gold, we may not like whatever, but we all agree that fiat and a CBDC is at its core corrupt and broken. And if we can at least get consensus on that, then we can move forward and say, right, what are the solutions? And then we can at least move forward and actually say, okay, we know it's not fiat and we know it's not a CBDC. What are our options? And we can list literally on a whiteboard, if you will, and say, all right, well, we've got gold. Okay. We've got Bitcoin. Okay. We've got Hex. We've got this. We've got that. Okay. Which one can we use more freely? Well, gold's going to be pretty difficult to use. And if you want to put a layer two solution on gold, which is essentially writing a banknote against gold, you're back to fiat. So it's like, you know, I acknowledge my biases. Even if you brainstorm this, the ultimate solution is Bitcoin. And I say that with a master's of business, with a degree in applied economics, having lived this space for years, having been in business for years, having worked for government, having made this passion, having written books on finance and investing, the best solution is Bitcoin. Not because I like Bitcoin, but because there is no better solution. And I put it to everyone out there. I always say this. I say, if you can find me a better solution than Bitcoin, I'm all in. But yet there's not a single human being that I've ever put that question to. And that's a lot of human beings, because I'm online and I'm doing all these videos with lots of different audiences, and no one can come back with a better solution. So I ask, please, everyone, if you can find a better solution to fiat and Bitcoin, let me know so I can start talking about it.
Very good. I'm going for the conch shells personally.
I'm going for feathers and beads.
Now, well, Adam, thank you for that. And, you know, I think you're making some very good points there. And the reason I wanted to have this conversation was not just to dissect FTX, but to set it in context, right? Because there is an important context here. And actually, it comes down to individual freedom, you know, the way economies work, the way societies work. And the fundamental question is the way that the money system is working at the moment actually serving the community and serving individuals, or is it actually self-serving the governments and the other, you know, centralized entities? And I think the answer is yes, they are definitely playing the shots for their game rather than our game.
So we believe the FTX collapse was in fact a setup, a theory, and it's just a theory, but yeah, you know, these things kind of all line up. Mm. They're in bringing in a CBDC, and you alluded to it either directly or indirectly before. Now that FTX has collapsed and we can see that Bitcoin's broken, which it's not, but because that FTX thing collapsed, now you have to put your trust back into us so we can make a CBDC. And it's like, oh, isn't that interesting? Just at a time where all of the perfect storm came together, where, you know, the political party was getting lots of money from this. And by the way, FTX was founded on the same day, or registered on the same day, that Biden started his political campaign. What are the odds of that? The Democrats got the most amount of money from it. Interesting. The left-wing media was plugging the crap out of it. Interesting. And then when it collapsed, they sort of went quiet on the battlefront. And at the same time, it's like, aha, now we can introduce a CBDC. And it's because, you know, what are your competitions? There's three monies that we're looking at now. Fiat, a CBDC, which are cousins, or Bitcoin. Those are the three monies. Now, when it comes to fiat, which country are you choosing? Well, the truth is, the country with the biggest military. That is a matter of fact. Fiat is a money of war. You use our money or we will bomb you. That is a fact. But if you can't compete with countries like China and Russia, and you say, use our money to buy petrol, as an example, we can see the erosion of the petrodollar now. Look at these massive countries who are not using the petrodollar, which is the US dollar, therefore reducing a reduction on the demand of the US dollar, therefore reducing the purchasing power of that US dollar combined with the printing of the US dollar. It's going down very fast. The demand curve is shifting to the left because it's no longer used as the petrodollar or even on the SWIFT network by many nations. The supply curve is moving to the right. So when the supply curve is moving to the right and the demand curve is moving to the left at the same time, the price is plummeting. And that is what inflation is. It's going absolutely out of control. But now you've got this interesting saga where you've got big countries like China and Russia and Iran, and even India, who's bypassing the US dollar as the petrodollar. Are you going to bomb them? You can't. It's a stalemate now. You can't do what you've done before. You can't bully countries such as Iraq and Libya into submission and say, if you don't use our dollar as a petrodollar, we will take you out. You can't do that with China. You can't do it with Russia. You can't do it with Libya, and you can't do it with India. And if you make those countries an alliance, you are in a world of hurt, no matter how big your military thinks it is. If we weren't able to beat the Taliban in Afghanistan, if we weren't able to beat the VC in Vietnam, What hope in hell do you think you've got of beating a combined force of China, Russia, Libya, Syria, all the stands, Pakistan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, throw in North Korea and India? Well, it's hard to say which way India would go, but you know, India is interesting because it's a Commonwealth country, and yet they're buying Russian oil with RMB or the ruble or the rupee, whatever it is, it's not with the US dollar. So that's why, you know, the US dollar is about to collapse. And the question is, what's next? And even if you say, and we've discussed this before, Martin, if they say, well, we're making a CBDC, okay, but we're, if it's America's CBDC, China doesn't have to accept it. And if China makes a CBDC, I don't have to accept it. So what are we going to use for money? It actually has to be a money that no one can print, which is Bitcoin.
Adam, I want to say thank you very much. I really enjoyed that conversation. And if people want to find out more about you and what you do, where do they go?
Thank you so much for joining me as well, Martin. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to work with you over the year. For those of you who haven't met me, I'm Adam Stokes. You can join me on Adam Stokes on YouTube. My Twitter handle is Adam_Stokesy. You can also check out my book, 28 Pro Trader Tips, The Art of Trading. And if you want to do anything crypto safely, head over to thecrypto.land. That's www.thecrypto.land. And once again, Martin, well done for always remaining curious. When we first met, you were not convinced with Bitcoin at all, but I can see over the, I think, 3 years we've been working together now, I haven't sold you yet, but I can see you coming around.
Well, I'm open-minded. I'm asking, hopefully, sensible, open questions, right? And that's what I try to do on the channel. So thank you very much. We'll be watching over the next few months, and I'll get you get back on down the track, and we'll continue the journey.
Thank you so much, Martin.
Have a great 2023.